Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire. Eric, we are 1 week away. Well, actually, a couple days less than 1 week away. We are recording on a Saturday here from the 2020 NFL Draft. And not a ton going on player personnel-wise for the Lions, as everybody could imagine. But there's a lot going on as far as preparations for the draft. You were on a conference call with general manager Bob Quinn yesterday, so I'm sure that'll get mixed into our discussions here today. But once again, our podcast is going to be centering around questions from the listeners.
Yeah, there's a ton of draft questions. Last week I mentioned that we got 70 questions, which is double our normal. And then this week we got 96. So it's going to be hard to hit them all, but we're going to try and do our best to
rapid fire everybody's.
Right, exactly.
All right, so we'll start right from the top. It's going to be we're going to talk about quarterbacks first. This is our normal format. We're going to go position by position. Let's go through fast, especially through quarterback, because depending on who you are, there's not a great need there. Casey's question: Do you think Jalen Hurts could interest the Lions at pick 85 or possibly in the fourth? Especially if they move back and acquire extra draft capital. Seems like a good fit for Bevel, in my opinion.
Yeah, I do think he's a good fit for the Bevel offense as well. I don't know if they'd be willing to invest in a third-round pick in a quarterback, and that's really where I think he's going to go. I think he's going to go somewhere in day two or in the second or third round. I don't think the Lions will be in the mix for that, even though systematically he would be a good fit. He does have some developmental progress that needs to be made. If he's there in the fourth, it's a little easier to palate, but I still think that if they take a quarterback, it's going to be much later. And I'm not even sure they'll take one at all. So while I do like the fit and the upside, I think he's probably going to be a little bit too expensive for what the Lions are looking for.
All right, Brandon's question: can you guys have a small segment on rounds 2 through 7 quarterbacks you draft if you were a new GM afraid of Tua's injury, comma, need a quarterback, and don't have the ammo to grab Herbert or Burrow? It's got to be the shortest segment ever, Eric.
Yeah, I think Love is the guy that you'd want to be targeting, right? Jordan Love from Utah State.
The big Jordan Love fan.
And I think he has the most potential if you're out of the Burrow to a Herbert race. Hurts is definitely going to be in that mix is from a developmental side, as is Jacob Eason from Washington, Jake Fromm from Georgia. And that's probably the end of the list of guys that would be able to maybe spot start in their first year with starter potential in 2021. You have other guys that are developmental beyond that, but if you're in a spot where you're like, hey, I need a quarterback and Burrow, Tua, and Love and Herbert are gone, I think you have to make a strong push for Love no matter where you are. Even though those other guys like Eason and Fromm are interesting, Love's really the target.
All right, moving on to the running back. Sean asks, what are your thoughts on day two running backs, specifically Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Taylor, Dobbins, Moss, and Swift?
I think Dobbins is the Lions' preferred choice at running back. After him, it's probably Taylor, even though Swift will be probably number two or even number one on a lot of teams' boards. For the Lions, I think he'll slot in third with Edwards-Helaire as the fourth guy. All of those guys I'm expecting to be gone by the end of round two, which means if you're going to take one,
I think I take it at the beginning of round two or trade into the end of round two.
Yeah, exactly. And it probably is like 35 is where you're going to – because I think between 35 and 50 – I could see all four of them going. Now, Dobbins, like I said, he's that power runner. He's got, he can catch the ball. He can do everything that the Lions are looking for. Taylor is an exceptional athlete. He has a little bit more wear and tear. And so I think he's going to be a little bit behind Dobbins in the grand scheme of things. Swift would be a completely different change of pace back, adding more speed and shiftiness. So it's a little harder to project him into the Lions scheme. Whereas Edwards-Helaire, my comp for him is Devonta Freeman, who we all know the Lions tried to acquire last season. So Edwards-Helaire is a very interesting name, and some people are really going to like him even better than all three. But for the Lions, I think he probably slots in there at four. Maybe he challenges Swift for three, but that's the order I have them in right now.
All right, Honolulu Blue for life. You kind of already answered the question. Which Big Ten stud running back fits Detroit's blocking scheme better, J.K. Dobbins or Jonathan Taylor? You did point out that Dobbins would be the Lions' preference. Moving on, Tim Tebow, but no W. I feel a bit bewildered by the, quote, need for a running back. Wouldn't it be smarter to get offensive line help, especially run blocking? Are there really upgrades at running back to be had compared to who we have on the roster, assuming later round picks?
I think the need for running back comes from the health issues from Kerryon Johnson and Bo Scarborough. I don't think there's, like, as far as an upgrade, the four guys that we just talked about, I think those guys are upgrades, or can at least, you're upgrading the health and reliability of them. After that, I think the need is at depth. And yeah, if you're comparing running back need versus offensive line need is very much a bigger need than running back. And there's some running backs you can get a little bit later. So what will the Lions' preference be? I think it's going to be with what Tim thinks. I think they're going to prefer the offensive line over the running backs. And while adding an elite running back like Dobbins would be a lot of fun, I think the Lions are probably looking the other way and saying, let's get an offensive lineman, work with what we have, maybe add some more depth later.
All right, moving on to the wide receiver position. To Between the Numbers, they asked, one of my favorite wide receiver targets is Van Jefferson of Florida, but he will be 24 by the start of the season. How do you see age playing a factor for the Lions? That's somewhat interesting. I mean, you wouldn't think it would have much, especially with later round picks, mm-hmm. wouldn't have much to do with age.
I think he's probably a third rounder, and I they can live with the age in the third round if he's there at like 85.
The average career maybe, is very short anyways.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if he slides to round four, I mean, even better. I like Jefferson as well. I liked his father when his father was with the Lions, and I think he has the potential to be an inside-out guy, mostly getting most of his snaps kind of as a big slot. So I think where he's, if you're looking at him any sooner than like pick 85, maybe age plays a factor, but that's kind of where I see him in that late three, early four. And I don't think age will hurt him that much.
Jake French asks, if the Lions trade down with Miami and get the 26th pick, and then Okuda and both AJ Epenesa and Justin Jefferson are there. Wait, oh, well, I don't even think Okuda would be there.
No, he's saying. He's saying if you get
Okuda five, at five. They get Okuda at five. I'm sorry. And both AJ Epenesa and Justin Jefferson are there. Who would they take? And what are your thoughts on the fit for Devin Duvernay, Michael Pittman to the Lions?
So if it's between Epenesa and Justin Jefferson, it's going to be Epenesa. They are going to value Epenesa very high, in my opinion. We're going to, at Lions Wire, we've done a collaborative top 10 for the Lions. And Epenesa is going to be in that top 10. Justin Jefferson is not. So it's our belief at Lions Wire, it's my belief that Epenesa is definitely the higher of the two. Now, as far as Duvernay and Pittman, I think they both have some interesting potential with the Lions. Pittman was with the Lions at the Senior Bowl. He has some special teams potential. He's a good hard worker. You're probably looking at him in between day, you know, round two and round three. If you can get him in three at like pick 65, that's great. I think 35 is probably a little too early. So he's, for my opinion, he's kind of in between those. Whereas Duvernay is more of a day three guy. Maybe you use a fourth rounder on him. He's a slot. Whereas Pittman's an outside guy. Duvernay's a slot who can also go vertical, and he has more of that blazing speed. So they're different players, but I could see both of them fitting into what the Lions are looking for, because they're going to need replacements in both the slot and at the X. So Pittman fits the X and Duvernay fits that slot. So I could see both of them as potential fits for the Lions, just depending on where the Lions want to target a receiver.
All right. Kyle Klein has an interesting question about next year's wide receiver class. Next year's wide receiver class looks good, very good overall. Can you see the Lions holding off on drafting Martins, Marvin's replacement until next year while only taking a day three wide receiver for this season since they have starters in place?
Yeah, it's possible that they want to wait and they just add a depth guy that can compete for wide receiver 4 or 5 type, slot potential or outside potential. I think, you're going to be replacing Marvin next year, but you might be replacing Amendola next year as well. So if you're looking at if they don't end up landing one of the top receivers on days 1 and 2, then a guy like Duvernay could be your slot option reserve to replace Amendola on day 3. John Hightower is a guy we've mentioned several times out of Boise. He's a natural X who can is a vertical guy. Also has a little bit of range to go in the slot. Also has some receiving ability. He's a guy you're going to find on day 3 who could potentially replace Marvin next year as well. So there's some options where if they do end up passing on one of the top receivers on day 3, that could eventually work their way up into a starting role in 2021 because this is such a deep class.
All right, so moving on to the offensive tackles. Keith Fountain's question is, if Young is off the board when the Lions pick at 3, is there an offensive lineman in this class that grades higher than Okuda that would warrant the pick at number 3? This is assuming they can't trade back and have close grades on other corners that they think they can get in the second round.
I don't believe that there is an offensive lineman that they will have graded higher than Okuda. If you're saying I can't trade back and Okuda's there. Yeah, if I can't trade back and Okuda's there and offensive linemen are there, I think they're still taking Okuda. There's not a question in my mind. If Keith would have said, now, what if you trade back? Well, now I think offensive tackle is more in the mix. Wirfs, Wills, Thomas, Becton, all these guys are going to be in that 7 to 15 range. Exactly. So, none of them are going to be higher value than Okuda, in my opinion.
All right, BC Ski asks, is Mekhi Becton, the Louisville offensive tackle, creeping up into a possibility for the Lions in round 1? Well, you kind of covered that, only if they trade back. There are a lot of scouts really saying he may be the best left tackle to come out in a very long time and is an extremely good run blocker.
I think the hype around Becton is surrounding his size.
He's gigantic, right? 6'7", yeah. 364.
And that is rare, and I think that's what people are so in love with, is that is a
people
rare
like gigantic people type. In football.
Yeah. Right. And on my board and what I believe the Lions will look at, I think they're still going to have Wirfs and Wills higher. And from talking to Jeff Risden, he believes they'll have Andrew Thomas higher as well. So while Becton may be rising up boards around the league, I don't know if he's as natural of a pure fit in Detroit, even though he would fit. I just don't know where he would fit in that top 4. I don't think he would be in the top 2 on the Lions board personally.
All right. Sliding inside to the interior offensive line, Robert Canfield asked, the Lions had the guard rotation with Glasgow last season, but Bob Quinn also paid TJ Lang big money before. So it is possible Quinn does value the guard position, but didn't value Graham Glasgow, and would spend a day 2 pick on a grading either guard spot. Well, I guess I would agree with that.
Yeah, that's very possible.
He didn't value Glasgow like he did at TJ Lang. You could also see with the rotation they had at guard during the season.
Yeah, the rotation thing was just, it's still a little bit confusing, and I believe it was set up as a insurance plan in case someone got hurt, which eventually, we did see happen until your guys started getting hurt.
Yep.
Right. And so that was their way of getting Wiggins, game reps to stay fresh, I guess. But I don't know. I still didn't like it. I still don't like it. It's possible that they didn't value Glasgow.
Yeah,
I mean, they didn't offer him.
Yeah,
it's very possible. It's strange because he was such a dynamic fit in what they were looking for, but that's neither here nor there at this point. He's no longer with the organization. So they could look at a guard on day 3 or day 2. If in my opinion, it would be the 3rd round, not necessarily the 2nd. I could even see them looking at a guard in the 4th round, because depending on what you're looking for, there's a handful of guys out there that could challenge to start. But you know, this tackle class is really unique, and there's a lot of very good talent at tackle. And it also wouldn't surprise me if they valued a tackle higher in the draft than a guard, that they would then take that tackle and then push Vaitai potentially inside. So
it's surprising you bring that up. Surprising you bring that up, because you have an article about that this morning.
I did write that this morning based on the conversation with Bob Quinn yesterday, where he was saying the versatility of Vaitai gives him a lot of options. And when you look at the draft, the tackle prospects, they have much more, a much higher ceiling, I guess, than the guards will. There's only a couple of like guard center guy interior players that have really high upsides, where there's several guards that have, or several tackles that have very high upside. So I think the Lions might value that tackle spot better if they take a tackle and they push Vaitai into guard. Now you also have insurance if you don't want to keep Taylor Decker beyond next year. Maybe that guy you drafted now becomes your left tackle, and then Vaitai pushes back out the right tackle for next year, and you still end up with your tackle. So there's some interesting thoughts, processes that can go into taking a tackle over a interior offensive lineman, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if that's exactly what the Lions did.
All right, Ben C. and Rich, any interior offensive lineman in the third round or later that could come in and compete for a starting job day one, although what we just covered, you wouldn't think that's what they would do.
Yeah, if a guy like Robert Hunt slides, he's a right tackle, big mauler, kind of reminiscent of Cody Ford, who went in the second round last year, or the year before, I think. Hunt is a guy who I think has that inside-outside flexibility like Vaitai, and if he ends up there in round three, he would be very appealing, maybe like at 65. If Hennessy is there, the Temple center, if you think you can project him out to right guard, then he would challenge as well. But there's also very natural guards like Damian Lewis and Ben Bredesen, John Simpson, Jonah Jackson. These are all guys that played guard last year, and most of them are bruisers. The only issue is Bredesen, Simpson, and Jackson played left guard, whereas Lewis is the only one that played right, which is really where they need the help. But again, what are you going to do with Joe Dahl? Do you like Joe Dahl at left guard? Do you like Joe Dahl at right guard?
I like him at fullback.
Exactly. So, you know, the flexibility of Joe Dahl, the flexibility of Vaitai, it puts all these guys in play. And I think all of them would challenge if they were the target in round three.
B. Curtis 1 has a question. Why is Ben Bredesen getting love as a good late round fit for the Lions, but Bo Benschowl seems to be a forgotten man on this roster? Benschowl had a better college career in the same conference as Bredesen. You know what's so interesting about Bo Benschowl? He's a guy, undrafted free agent, you know, not a drafted guy, and fans just love him.
Well,
like he's like a backup quarterback, basically. You know, it's like they love him more than the starter.
In 2018, he was Pro Football Focus's number one interior run blocker, and then didn't get drafted. And the reason he didn't get drafted is because he has limited athleticism. And you could see that as a rookie. You could see how stiff he was. And while that, you could also see the improvement happening as camp wore on. But his athleticism, or lack thereof, is what caused him to go undrafted. Bredesen does not have that issue. Bredesen has a lot of athleticism. His arrow has been pointing up every season. He does not look like he has plateaued yet. And so there's a lot of potential for him to get better. Both players are getting cross-trained at guard, and both have the potential to play center, but they're more natural guards. I think it's just a matter of Bredesen has more potential and more athleticism, and that's why he's probably going on day two, whereas Benschowl went undrafted.
Lions Uncensored podcast asks, do you see Solomon Kindley from Georgia as a plug-and-play player at right guard? I'm hoping our second, third, or fourth round pick, or is there someone else you value or think is a better fit in that spot? You kind of pointed out a couple.
Yeah, I pointed out the value players. I don't think Solomon Kidney is a plug and play right guard. He played guard at Georgia, and there's things to like about him, but there's also flaws in his game that need to be improved. He's a guy that if they drafted, I would be projecting him as a developmental guy. And I think I have a 7th round grade on him right now. So I think he's draftable and there's potential, but I don't see him as a plug and play starter. No.
All right. That's it for the offense. Flipping over to the defensive side of the ball. Scott Williams asked, do you think the Lions should take Brown? It's Derek Brown at number 3, or could they trade back to 10 to 12 and still get him? Well, that's a toss up. Yes, both are possible, I guess. I mean, it's possible he could fall that far, but who knows?
I think the sweet spot for Brown is 7, right? So if the Lions trade back to 5, I think they're still targeting Okudah. If they trade back to 6 and Okudah's not there, then it's Brown. If you trade back to 7, Okudah's, I don't think, would be there at 7, and then that's where Derek Brown's going to go. I think if you trade back to 9, Derek Brown won't be on the board anymore. So if they trade back to 6 or 7, I think that's the sweet spot for Derek Brown in this draft.
All right. Going to edge questions. Jimmy asks, a lot of interest on Lions Twitter about the edge from Notre Dame, Julian Aquara, for the Lions. Can you address any shortcomings and red flags he had, and why or why not he may be fit for Detroit, Romeo Aquara's brother?
Yeah, the biggest red flag that stands out right now is that he broke his leg last year, and without the medicals, it's tough to gauge where he's at. So that's going to hurt him in this current environment, right? So the injury is going to be the most glaring issue right now. But as far as scheme fit, he has some issues stopping the run. That is going to be a big red flag for the Lions. The pass rushing potential is there. The edge setting needs some work. The run defense needs a lot of work. And that's why he's going to drop. I have on my board 7 edge rushers ahead of him. So he's my number 8.
Yeah, with 2 that we've talked about a lot over the last several weeks, Bradley and I, yeah, and Josh Uche. And so I would assume if they would, yep, draft Aquara and one of those other two are available, the fans would be rather upset. And probably we would be as well. Mm-hmm. All right, Anthony Dorsett's question. I think our biggest need by far is Jack linebacker. Who are some options other than the aforementioned Josh Uche or Terrell Lewis?
Lewis is a guy we haven't talked about as much, but he fits. Anai is
an Alabama guy.
Terrell Lewis. Yep, got a lot of length, met with the Lions a couple of times here and on video conference. But if you're looking for a player that can play Jack and you don't want to include, you know, Zach Bond or Uche or Terrell, you're looking at guys who, like Bradley and I, who can play there situationally. Aquara can play there situationally. Curtis Weaver is a very interesting name that I think not a lot of people are talking about. He's probably a pure Jack. They could talk him into doing some off-the-ball linebacker stuff because Boise used to drop him in coverage quite a bit. He's almost identical in size to Dont'a Hightower. And so that's a 265 linebacker that they dropped regularly. So Weaver's, I think, probably my next highest guy. After that, it gets into day 3 when you're looking at probably Alex Highsmith and then a whole bunch of different pass rusher only type guys. So, yeah, Weaver is the name that stands out to me there.
John Gillenwater asks, any edge rushers that Bob Quinn or Matt Patricia seem to be high on?
The name I've heard a couple of times is Jonathan Greenard from Florida. He's an edge rusher, played at Florida last year. Before that, he played at Louisville. I talked to one person and they say, man, he took a big step from Louisville to Florida in his play. And then I talked to another guy and they say, throw out his Florida tape because Louisville was where he was best. So it's kind of some mixed reactions on, you know, where he looked best. And last year at Florida, I wasn't overly impressed with him, but he played that buck linebacker, which is essentially like a jack linebacker. But I know that they've been looking at him. The other guy that has stood out to me since the Senior Bowl is Alton Robinson from Syracuse. He's also an edge guy who can play down and up. The alma mater of Matt Patricia definitely stands out. And there's some, I think he has some good, he has a good ceiling to him. Had a good junior season, took a big step back in 2019. So there's a bit of a sleeper potential here where I think he could be a guy you could get in the fourth or fifth round and pair with Austin Bryant. And then you just kind of let those guys fill in as kind of pass rushing specialists. So those are a couple names that are standing out to me as guys Patricia, I think, will like.
All right. Moving back to the linebacker position. Casey asks, any chance the Lions draft Simmons and decide to play him as a Mike? So that's Isaiah no. Simmons.
Yeah. No. The way that the Lions use their Mike and Will linebackers, they use them as gap penetrators, and they have to be able to take on blocks. And Simmons struggles. His biggest weakness is taking on blocks. So playing him at the mic would be the exact opposite of what I would do. I would keep him in the slot. I would keep him outside the tackle box. I would let him play from the tackle box all the way to the sideline and deep. But I do not like him in the middle, and especially in the way the Lions use their scheme. Putting him in the middle of the defense would be like, you know, driving your Ferrari to the grocery store and that's it. You know what I mean? You're not drafting him. You're not buying a Ferrari to drive to the grocery store, and you're not drafting Isaiah Simmons just to play him in a take on block mic role.
All right. Chad One's question is, I'd like your thoughts on potential late round picks, Marcus Bailey, Daryl Taylor, Nick Harris, Jordan Brooks, particularly from a schematic standpoint, or, and any other sleepers you may have.
Marcus Bailey is a bit of a sleeper only because he tore his ACL. He played Sam at Purdue. Probably would be a Will in the NFL. He was considered one of the better off-the-ball linebackers in this potential draft class, but that injury really, really set him back a bit. I think someone's going to end up taking him near the top of day three. I don't think he'll end up going late, but that's just my guess, because if they look back at the tape that he's had, there's a lot of potential there from an athleticism standpoint. let's see. What was the next one? Nick Harris. Is he talking about the
Nick Harris, Daryl Taylor?
Okay.
Jordan Brooks. You could skip over Nick Harris if you don't see him on your list.
Yeah. Nick Harris is the center. That's why I think he's talking. That's why
maybe it means Malik about. Harrison.
Well, Malik Harrison would be a great fit, but I think he's going to be much.
That was the closest thing to Nick Harris I saw on the list.
Okay. Now Daryl Taylor, he played like a Sam linebacker at Tennessee, but I see him more as an edge guy. He could be, I think he's probably going to end up going in the third round. There's a lot of potential with him, but he didn't test at the combine. So from an athletic standpoint, it's a bit harder for me to project, but if they're looking for a guy who's going to play on the edge and could maybe drop in coverage, he's kind of a sneaky name to know. Daryl Taylor out of Tennessee. The last guy was Jordan Brooks, and Brooks is another guy that I think is going to go high. I think he's going to go in the second, third round. He is he fits the profile. He's got kind of an AJ Klein feel to him, which was AJ was a late drafted off the ball linebacker. I think Brooks is probably going to appeal to more teams early than when the Lions would want to target an off the ball linebacker. So I think if you're looking at a guy who you think is going to go late of that bunch, Marcus Bailey is probably the one that will be the furthest down the board. And like I said, it's really just because of that injury. I think the potential there is there from him.
All right. Well, now we'll move on to cornerback. This is a big hot button question. Evan Donovan asks, any insight into the strong disapproval of taking Okuda? I've heard people dislike taking a cornerback and others not like taking one that high. I don't get either perspective. I think he's potentially generational talent at a position of need.
Well, I'm with Evan here. Most of the negative comments I hear about Okuda come from people that are Isaiah Simmons fans, and they're basically trying to tear Okuda down to say this guy's not as good as Simmons, and that's why they shouldn't take Okuda. Now, maybe there are other detractors that say they just don't like him in general, and again, that's something I don't agree with. Like, I do think there's value in taking a corner high, and I know there's a learning curve at corner, but Okuda has one of the
shortest. He will get toasted.
Yeah, I mean,
especially with our lack of a pass rush.
That's the nature of corner and in rookies. There is a learning curve, but I think his learning curve is short. And playing at Ohio State, they play a pro style press corner offense where their Ohio State corners always translate to the NFL very smoothly. You know, a lot of the top corners we've seen drafted in the last several years have come in the first round, have all come from Ohio State. Almost it feels like they've all come up from Ohio State. Okuda is just the next in line. He is very good in all aspects. He's intelligent. He's able to close on the ball. The biggest knock that I keep hearing on Okuda is that he doesn't have long speed, which I think is a bit insane to me. First of all, he runs a 4.48. That was his 40 time. The average 40 time for a corner is 4.5. He ran a 4.48. So he's at a little bit above average, right? The average 40 time for a receiver is 4.51. So again, he's ahead of the curve on that. But when you're talking about long speed, the big thing you need to be looking at is how does he maintain his speed? Because being able to run in a straight line is one thing. Being able to run with a receiver is completely different. There's a lot of guys that run a 4.3 that have to throttle down when adjusting to a receiver, and then that throttling down makes them slower. Okuda does not have to throttle down because he's very smart and he understands what the receivers are doing, and he has the burst and closing speed to stay. Therefore, he doesn't lose speed when he's covering. And the fact that he doesn't lose speed, that 4.48 is plenty good. You don't need to be a 4.4. You don't need to be a 4.3 corner in this league to hang with some of these guys. It's just not the way it works. There's a reason why Richard Sherman who ran a 4.6 is able to stay with these corners, because he's smart and he understands how to do it and he understands angles. Now he's going to get toasted too when they send a guy, a speedster, passed him on a vertical route. But most of the time, Sherman's able to overcome his lack of speed with intelligence. And it's the same thing with Okuda. The long speed is not an issue at all. And the fact that people keep pointing to that as an issue to take him, I think, is lunacy.
Oh, man, we're going to take this guy, aren't we? No trade back or anything. No, it's going to be a disaster.
You got to be ready. Look, I'm currently writing in an article, and I'm hoping to put it out tomorrow morning. And it's 10 things Lions fans need to brace themselves for. It's basically like 10 things that we need to be aware of that might happen. And my first thing on the list is, they're going to stay at 3 and take Okuda. You need to be ready for that. Like,
no,
really.
No, I'm getting ready for it. Is one of the 10, be braced for them sometime during the draft, something very bizarre happening with their internet, even though there's supposed to be breakers in place to where, like, they fall like 5 spots in the draft because they can't get a pick in and nobody can prove that they have a problem with their internet connection. Something weird is going to happen to this team during this odd NFL draft setup.
I kept it to just drafting stuff, not like logistics.
You got to get telecommunications involved. This is me just as the curse though comes.
So just to help maybe alleviate some of the people who might be worried about that, there are fallbacks on top of fallback plans. So let's say, the primary person is Bob Quinn, and he's going to be submitting the pick to the league. Okay. But if Bob Quinn does not make the pick, then they have a secondary option that the league then looks at and says, okay, now we're looking at someone that's not with Bob Quinn, and we're going to ask them. And if they don't chime in, there's a third option. And if that third option isn't there, then the league will pause the draft until they can figure out how to get a hold of one of the Lions. So there are plans in place to prevent a team from just falling because, you know, their Wi-Fi goes away or something. There's a lot of that.
We're headed into the world of the absurd, and the Lions do not handle that well.
All right, back to corners.
All right, let's talk about Maurice. Maurice, could you see us moving down to say 5 or 6 and taking Simmons, and then using using a second rounder on corner like Jeff Gladney?
So I'm going to ignore the Simmons part and just say, yeah, they move down to 5 or 6 and miss on Okuda and take somebody else. Okay. And then if they're looking at a second round corner, I believe they'd be looking at Trayvon Diggs as their number one. I think Christian Fulton would be their number two. A guy like Gladney would be in the mix from a talent standpoint. He did run press at TCU, but it's not exactly the same style of press that the Lions run. So it's not as smooth of a fit. Diggs and Fulton make a lot more sense to me. AJ Terrell, Jalen Johnson, those are all guys that I think are going to be right up there near the top if the Lions are looking at a guy in round two. Gladney could definitely be in the mix, but he wouldn't be my preferred choice.
All right. All happy teams are alike, as starting to feel like Okuda isn't the pick. Starting to feel like the other two are higher, Henderson and Terrell. Thoughts, really?
I don't feel that way at all. I have Terrell as my corner 6, the kid out of Clemson. I think he's fine, but I think he's a second rounder. I know Henderson is the number 2 corner, and I've even heard some people suggest that he's the number 1 corner. That's based purely on his athleticism. He's over 6 feet. He runs 4.39. He's got good jumps. Yeah, so that all translates to a good athletic corner. But I don't think he fits the Lions system. He is allergic to tackling. And so that alone, the Lions are going to massively downgrade him for that. And so I have him as my 5th cornerback, and the only reason I have him as my 5th is because I think he's a talented player that maybe they think they could fix. But if you're looking at just if they don't think they can fix him, he's probably cornerback 10 on the Lions board, if that. If he's not off the board altogether, because his tackling or lack thereof is just bad. And so, yeah, there's going to be teams that like Henderson. I just don't think the Lions are one of them.
All right, so that's it for all the position players on offense and defense. Well, Pierre had a question. We probably should note it. What are your thoughts on C.J. Henderson? You already gave him.
Okay.
Moving on to special teams, the punter question. Ben C. asks, what's the earliest the Lions could take a punter? Second round, I say. Wouldn't surprise me to see them take one with their second, fifth round pick. Second, fifth round pick is still a little early for me, but, yeah, I could see that happening.
So their second fifth round pick is pick 166. Okay. Another one of my 10 things the Lions fans need to brace themselves for. The Lions will take a punter at pick 149. Okay.
First fifth round pick.
Correct. That seems to be the slot that the top punters typically go off the board. 2 years ago, Seattle literally used pick 149 for their punter, right? I got a feeling that this is if when 149 rolls around, Braden Mann could be the name called to the Lions at that spot. you're going to have five picks ahead of him that you're going to fill in other spots, and they're going to, a fifth rounder is a gamble. You know, a fifth rounder isn't necessarily going to make the roster. And if you're fifth round,
or he could be an all pro.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But I think this is the spot where they say, let's get our guy. Let's not risk him being there later. Let's take the punter that we want, because he's going to be better value to us than, you know, taking a gamble on a corner that may or may not develop, or a receiver that may not play more than 10% of snaps, where I think that's the spot that the top punter is probably going to come off the board.
All right, let's move on to the target section. Derek S. would love to hear your ideal fourth round mock, Eric.
So if I'm allowed to pick whoever I want within reason, I think they take Okuda in the first round. And again, I'm not going to put trades in the mix here, because then I can get a little ridiculous there. But if they're just picking where they pick, then I would say you end up landing Okuda at 3. And then at pick 35, maybe a guy like Denzel Mims slides to them. I think he's a first round wide receiver who would challenge Marvin Jones to start this year. And you take him at 35, and now you've solidified a very, very aggressive offensive weapon talent room. When you get into the third round, I would like Jazz Uche there. Again, I'd take Uche. I'd feel comfortable taking Uche at 35. If he falls to 67, that's great. I think realistically he might. But I also could see Uche going to the Ravens at 28. You know what I mean? But if he falls and he's there at 67, I'd take Uche at 67. And I'd be ecstatic because of what he would be able to do to this defense. My other third rounder is Agim, who I've been talking about for a while. I think Agim is a guy who, again, fits exactly what they're looking for. And then if Damian Lewis is there in the fourth round, great. That's five players that can come in, and all of them would make an impact at some level. So that would be my kind of ideal four rounds if the Lions don't trade.
All right, Spartan Lion and Andres ask similar question. Andres, I don't know why I can't read the name. All right, assuming the draft goes Burrow and Young, and the Lions are picking anywhere between 3 and 9, who are the three prospects you think they could select, not named Okuda or Simmons? I guess so, Derek Brown's one of them.
Yep, so on my, what I believe to be the Lions' top 25, I believe if Young, Okuda, Simmons, Burrow are off the board, it would be Derek Brown, Javon Kinlaw, and then Jerry Jeudy. And then I'll even throw in Tristan Wirfs as a fourth guy. So those are the guys that I think are going to be right near the top if Okuda and Young are off the board.
All right, so Doug, but it's not Doug, it's Doug, asks, what's the ideal realistic cornerback defensive line draft combo? Okuda and Blacklock, Kinlaw and Diggs, Brown and Dantzler, et cetera, et cetera. I love Okuda, but Kinlaw and Diggs sounds like a great pickup.
Yeah, I mean, Kinlaw and Diggs sounds like a great pickup if that is what you're targeting.
Also sounds like a good buddy cop duo.
In my opinion, the drop-off between Okuda and Diggs is pretty significant. And Diggs, I think, is their number two. So it would be hard for me to pass on Okuda and any defensive tackle as opposed to Diggs and any defensive tackle. I just think Okuda and slot in that defensive tackle, and I'm going to be happy with it regardless, just because I feel like Okuda is that good of a prospect.
All right, Michael asks, what really good players are likely to be available to the Lions at positions of need that they won't take due to scheme / other issues?
So CJ Henderson, that's the name that I just talked about, right?
Yeah, you mentioned him.
Yep, he's a guy who people are going to, like I said, absolutely love, but he doesn't fit the scheme. He doesn't tackle. I also think Isaiah Simmons is going to be really low on the Lions board comparatively to what people believe he's going to go. So I think the Lions are going to be down on Simmons as well. So right there, there's two athletes that people love that I don't think the Lions are going to care that much about.
You've really changed on Simmons over the last several weeks. And I know there's a lot of evolving that happens, you know, between the end of the season and the draft, but does it have a lot to do with the addition of Harmon
and Collins? Yeah. The addition by adding Collins and Harmon, you've essentially, and then having Will Harris from last year and then adding Jayron Kearse, you've essentially eliminated a lot of the need for a lot of the spots where you would play Simmons. Add in the fact that Bob Quinn is talking about drafting players that don't need training camp, that or don't need much of a training camp in order to play. And again, that's a big negative against Simmons. Simmons, his biggest value is that he can play in a lot of different spots. But if you are playing on a shortened season and you're not able to teach players where that, you know, where they're going to play, you're not going to move him around. You're going to focus him in one area and that's where you're going to play him. And again, now you're devaluing what his best asset is. I think everything that the Lions have done devalues him. Everything the Lions want devalues him. And I like him as a player. I just don't like him for the Lions. And I think my worry is that I'm trying so hard to explain why he doesn't fit that I'm almost like going overboard, and I don't want to be overly negative because I do like him as a player and I do think he would fit the Lions scheme, but I don't think he fits this Lions roster. And
it's currently constructed.
Exactly. They would have to undo so many different things in order to make room and make him work. And it just goes against everything they've done for the last 4 years. Now, if they take Simmons, I'm going to have to eat a lot of crow here, but it just doesn't make sense to me based on what they've done over from a construction standpoint. Everything they've done points away from Simmons. And like I said, it's just, I don't see the fit in this current design.
All right. Detroit Lions hopeful asks, who's this year's surprise second round pick?
That's a hard one, right? Because the second round at 35, I don't think there's going to be a surprise. I'm going to point back to a Jim as being the surprise third round pick. Now, you know, maybe he's not a surprise anymore since I've kind of hyped him up as much as I have, but I think if there's going to be a surprise on day two, Ajeem just seems like the guy.
Again, who, you did it after saying you did it again.
I think he's the guy who would surprise people who, you know, are unfamiliar with some of the sleeper names.
It seems to me that there are so many holes on the roster that there really is no surprise second round pick because they could go in so many different directions with it. The only real surprise is if they go with somebody way down everybody's board and you're not going to be able to guess who that is. And that's going to be the surprise, you know, if there is a surprise. All right. Oh, I'm going to go on to Jordan's question. Rounds 2 and 3 are where I can see the Lions excelling in the draft. What are the best and worst picks we can make based off of draft position strength and team needs? Kind of answered that.
Yeah,
in a way, that's a pretty long answer, I think.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of wrong ways they can go. I point back to the first question with Derek. You know, who are some of the guys I think would be the best? You know, if Mims falls to them, that would be the best. I think in the second round, but there's really a lot of potential all across. The positions I would be looking for on day three or day two are wide receiver, offensive and defensive lines. And if they don't take Akuda in the
corner,
first,
if they don't, yeah, if they corner. Don't draft Akuda.
Yeah. Those are the spots that I think make the most sense.
All right. Brandon Kerr asks if the Lions can get two more picks on the second day, which gives them five picks altogether. What player would you like to see them move up to get using at least two of those picks? And how high would they go in your best opinion? Oh, wow.
It's getting more than one day two pick is going to be really hard. But if they can get another, at least one day two pick, and then they want to couple some of those picks together to move up, which I do think they will do. I do think moving up on day two is something they've done each of the last 2 years. And so it wouldn't surprise me.
Even if they don't move down in the first round.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
Is that basically if they only moved down in the first round?
No. I could see them staying at three, taking Okuda, taking a guy at 35, and then using one of their fifth round picks. Yeah, one of them using one of the two third round picks and maybe that fifth round pick to move up in the third round, or maybe from 65 up into the second. That's what I'm thinking. It's really all going to depend on who falls, but I do think moving up to get a guy is definitely something that Quinn is going to do this year. It's just a gut feeling.
All right. Detroit Above All asks, who are some of the day three prospects that you consider as, quote, your guys, the guys you would pound the table for in the draft room? You don't have it. You don't seem to have guys like that this year. Over the years, you always seem to have a guy or two. I don't know about you this year. You've been slacking.
Well, you know, I like Darrington Evans and A.J. Dillon, they're both running backs, so I think could end up falling on day four. I think day three. I think John Hightower is a guy who could fall to day three.
None of those guys are Larry Warford to you or David Morgan, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's true. Again, a Jim is a guy. Ageem is a guy. Jeez, oh, pizza, keep doing it. Ageem is a guy who a lot of people like in the fourth round that I think will go higher. I think most of my, I mentioned Alden Robinson as an edge guy who would be there on day three. Micah Ojemudia from Iowa is a guy we haven't talked a lot about because if they want to double dip at corner, Ojemudia makes a lot of sense. In the like fifth round, maybe fourth round, if depending on how they go, he's a guy who I could see them bringing in and letting compete with Amani Awarie and Daryl Roberts. If they end up passing on Okuda, then Ojemudia is the guy that I think people should be paying attention to. And those are my day three kind of sleeper guys, I guess. I don't have a guy that's like a seventh rounder that. You know, maybe one of those guys falls to the seventh round, right? And then that'll be my guy. Sure. But those seem to be like my favorites are all tend to be like guys that are in like what I consider the fourth or fifth round. So one of those guys falls, then yeah, that's the guy I've got a sleeper for.
All right, Toblerone Bone, what's your plan with undrafted free agents? I know they opened three roster spots today, but do you think they're going to be more selectively aggressive this year and use all their bonus money on a few guys due to the pandemic and not being able to get guys in the house?
Yeah, I do think the undrafted free agent pool is going to be much shallower for the Lions this year than what it's been in the past. They have 78 guys on the current roster, nine draft picks, which means they have three open spots where they don't have to cut a player. If they trade up and they lose a draft pick, then that of course opens up one more undrafted spot. But if they want to sign more than three undrafted free agents right now, they're going to have to start cutting guys that are actually on the roster. Right now you have, if you draft a punter, well then yeah, you can cut one or maybe both of the punters that are on your roster right now. You got an extra long snapper that you can probably lose. If you draft a offensive lineman, you might be able to lose an offensive lineman, right? So there's some flexibility to this roster right now, but I don't think they're going to bring in like 12 to 15 undrafted guys like they have in the past. I think it's going to be a lot more of an exclusive type club because typically they leave like 12 spots open. This year they have three. It's very unprecedented, and I think it is a direct result of the pandemic.
Yeah. All right. We'll do a couple of these trade ones. Dan Davis, with all the talk that Detroit is open for business as far as trading back goes, which team is Detroit most realistically able to move back with?
I still think it's the Giants and the Chargers, or the Dolphins and the Chargers. I don't think they're worried about the Giants, and I think they can move with the Dolphins or the Chargers and still potentially land Okuda. My opinion is they want to keep Okuda, right? They want to mm-hmm. walk out of this draft with him. And you can't go back further than six and feel comfortable that you're still going to be able to get them. So I'm still putting the Chargers and the Dolphins as the top two teams that could trade with Detroit.
Gary Gankvist, I'm really hoping for some bold moves and trade downs from Bob Quinn, maybe even several for quality picks. What would you say the chances are Bob Quinn turns Sonny Weaver in draft day?
Sonny Weaver, Kevin Costner's role in draft day, right?
Yeah, wild movie. Well, not really, you know, but as far as when we lose all sense of reality when he starts trading the draft picks, it gets wild.
I don't think he could pull a Sonny Weaver. I don't even think he'd trade down twice.
If he did, you can't fire him.
Yeah, I'm right.
If he pulls the Sonny Weaver in the end.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, if he pulled a Sonny Weaver, yeah, he's going to look real sharp. But I still think one trade down is still bold, in my opinion. So I'm not expecting Sonny Weaver type of a skill set out of Bob Quinn there.
All right, Mike Greiger Jr., if neither Miami nor the Chargers trade up, Detroit might still get an offer for a team wanting to move up for Okuda or Simmons. Detroit gets offered something like 9-20 from Jacksonville for three. Would you take that deal?
Man, that's a real tough decision, because getting two first-rounders in the top 20 has got to be extraordinarily appealing to the Lions. If they're not sold on Okuda, yeah, you make that move. If they're sold on Okuda, you don't. And I think that's really what it comes down to. If Young or if you think, or obviously taking Chase Young out of the equation here too, but it really depends on where they value Okuda. And if he's not as high as we all think he is, then yeah, that's a very appealing offer.
All right, I'm going to hold you to less than five word answers on the next. This is going to be tough for you. I know that.
Okay.
On these next few questions, all right? George Schaub and Nate B asked similar questions. What is the farthest back the Lions should trade back?
Six.
Should they trade back twice if it means missing out on one of the premier players?
No.
517 Bulldog asks, any scenario where you see the Lions trading up for Chase Young?
No.
All right. Igor Petrinovich asks, trading back will give the Lions at least 10 picks, but since no rookie minicamp, no OTAs, and with new CBA requiring fewer padded practices, all of which hurt the rookies, so the Lions use day three picks to move up in this draft or try to convert them into 20 or 21 picks?
I need more than five words for this one. give me just 1 second. I think other teams will take that strategy, but I think with the Lions having coached the Senior Bowl, I expect some of the Senior Bowl guys to be there. And if anything, I think the Lions would be willing to take guys they're comfortable with that they found at the Senior Bowl rather than trading back. And I think other teams will be looking to get out, not necessarily the Lions.
All right, back to short answers. MSU Lions fan, please prioritize the Lions draft needs. What's the bigger need, interior defensive line or edge?
I'd say they're even. Probably, if I had to pick one, interior defensive line.
I'm only going off because you're not following the guidelines I unfairly placed upon you. Tim, would you expect the first four picks to be cornerback, guard, edge, and wide receiver? And which position? All right. We'll start with that. Would you expect it that way? Those four positions: cornerback, guard, edge, wide receiver. I guess he's also saying in that order.
No, not in that order.
And which positions do you think the Lions might invest two picks?
Wide receiver, defensive tackle.
All right. So, and then he says wide receiver seems to be the obvious, but what about guard, edge, and cornerback? All right. Great show. Greetings from Germany. Let's go, Lions. Thanks for that part. Dave, what need position can they afford not to draft?
Punter.
right. Now we'll expand it. We'll make these long answers again. GM. Okay. All right, this is the roster question. Well, I wanted to get through, you know, we have a lot of questions and we're almost out of time. And I wanted to see, and I figured, like, well, we can answer these short.
I'll GM, do my best.
How healthy is Stafford? Any updates on his recovery? And if he's not 100%, what are the probabilities that you draft a quarterback in the first round?
He's 100%. We've heard he's 100% since the combine. Bob confirmed that yesterday as well. If he could practice today, if they were allowed to, he would be practicing. He's 100%.
All right. We're going to go to the general questions. Justin Hecht, with the draft being held remotely this year, do you think the Lions have a slight advantage, no difference, or are worse off compared to other NFL teams?
I think they have a slight advantage because they had the Senior Bowl. That gives them a lot of more information on players.
All right. Rich Koenigsnecht, I don't have cable during the offseason. Is the ABC draft coverage terrible? From what I've read, it sounds terrible. Also, is the draft available on ESPN Plus? I'm asking you because you guys have all the answers.
I believe ABC and ESPN are the same company, and so therefore it's the same broadcast.
No, it's not.
It's not.
No, last year, I don't know what they're doing this year, but I thought last year they put Kirk Herbstreit and the gang on ABC, and then they had the ESPN guys on ESPN. They had two separate telecasts. Somebody will write in and let me know if I'm wrong, but I believe that's
how it is. That does sound awful. Oh gosh.
I don't know. See, my thing is, and I, because you're an NFL Network draft follower, and I am too. You know, for most of my life it was definitely ESPN, but for most of my life there wasn't an NFL Network. To me, if you like the draft, you'll watch any of them because I always find a way to laugh. You know, no matter which one I'm watching, you know, if it's bad, if it's good, you know, either way.
The bottom line for me is I love Rich Eisen and I trust Daniel Jeremiah about 50 times more than I trust Mel Kiper. So it's an easy decision for me to pick NFL.
All right. Eric Mawson, I think we might have an answer to this. Do the players get paid if the season is delayed or canceled? That's a maybe. I think they might get like a minimum payment. Isn't that what baseball's doing right now?
According to the CBA, there is not a parameter in place to pay the players at this time.
Oh, okay. Now,
could they make an adjustment? Maybe. Sure. But from what I researched and I reached out to Jeremy Raceman of Pride of Detroit, who also tried looking up some of these answers. It doesn't sound like they would get paid because they only get paid when games are played.
Sure. So you covered this part. That is, do they have language in their contract that covers a situation like this, i.e. COVID-19 or other natural disaster? Could they apply for unemployment if they get laid off? Yeah, sure. They're employees like anybody else. Right? Yeah. All right, Kevin McGuire. If there's no NFL season, would the draft order be the same next year so the Lions would draft third again? My guess is no. I don't know if you have any information on that.
Dave Burkett of the Free Press addressed this question earlier in the week. Yep. And he basically said that when strike seasons have hit like baseball and hockey
is the most recent.
Right. They talked about averaging the season records of over the last couple of years to average out to establish a draft order. And I believe the Lions would have been 11th if there's no season. They'd have the 11th.
It's crazy. I mean, they picked that low.
Right. I mean, that's if they adapt the other schemes that have been laid out by the other professional sports, it sure seems like they'd be lower, like, 10 or 11 in that range.
Detroit Blue asks, could you see the Lions making another meaningful signing in free agency, depending on how the draft goes?
No, just because, I mean, maybe, but I'm still going to say no, just because, like I said, their roster is like full and they have the room if they need to, but I just don't see them going that route.
All right.
Anything else to jump out?
A couple of them. All right, Eric, what's a realistic year the Lions might start looking for Stafford's replacement? 3, 4, 5 years or more? I don't know. Maybe that's a tough one to answer.
As long as his back checks out, My guess is 4. That's my guess. I think he gets another contract extension, and then as that contract extension is wearing down, that's when they start to look.
All right. So the last Jared question I like. I actually like a lot of these questions. Too bad we're running low on time. But the Jared question, I feel we should ask like every week. Although it would probably be the same for the most part, is I need Joe and Eric's opinion separately. Well, Matt Patricia, Bob Quinn survived the 2020 season.
Well, you want to go first? Or you want me to go first?
Well, I would say no. But and I would say
And I would say yes. I mean, if
I'm leaning yes, because A, there might not be a season, so they can't fire him if there's no season.
Correct.
And B, there's another excuse. If there is a season and it's like 12 games and they go 1-11, be like, well, it wasn't fair. We didn't get the full 16 games, and then they bring him back. Like it's very possible that there's another excuse in place now, and if they do a poor job.
Yeah, and you can, and even if there is a season, there's not much of an off season to train the coach.
Yeah, guys that's more of the excuse. Now I'm on yes, crap.
I fully expect them as of today.
Yeah, they're going to be back
to be around. Yes.
All right, so we'll have to ask this question again in like 8 weeks, and then 16 weeks.
That's fine.
All right, Mike Holloman, which hurts the draft process more, the inability to have pro days or the inability to have prospects come to Allen Park for in-person visits and interviews?
Pro days, because a lot of the small school guys miss out on being able to showcase their talents. And that's really where I think the whole draft is going to be impacted, is a lot of these small school guys are going to miss out. A lot of these undrafted guys are not going to get offers. Guys like Tom Kennedy, who got a tryout last year and then made the team after getting a tryout, getting the contract, then actually playing last season. That's not going to happen this year because there's no tryout. So yeah, the pro days are definitely the biggest obstacle.
All right. Brian Ballard asks, judging by recent drafts, at best, we get 2 or 3 starters and then some contributors. What will it take to make this team truly competitive, especially with our division always getting so much better?
Well, you're going to have to get a lot of contributions. Okay, so, yeah, they get a starter in their round one, which is typical, and you get contributors in rounds 2 and 3 that are expected to take on starting roles the following season or
by the end of the first season.
2 years from then. Right. But this year, picking at 35, you're almost expecting that guy to start too. Now, maybe he doesn't.
Yeah, he should.
But he's,
well, it depends on the position, he's but going you think there. They would.
Yeah. The guy you're taking at 35 is going to be expected to take on starter snaps.
Contribute, yeah.
Now you've got, right. And then that means your first third round pick, because that's also high, you're probably putting the expectations that you've put on a round two guy in the past, you're putting on that guy at the top of round three. And then round three, you're expecting that guy to still be, you know, a guy that gives you 50% snaps or something along those lines and is going to have a starter role down the road. And you're probably expecting that out of round four. So the first 5 guys, you know, 1 through 2, from pick 3 to pick 109, you're probably hoping those 5 guys are contributing. And in the past, it was probably 3 guys that you were expecting to contribute. Now, this year, I think you're hoping for 5. And that's going to be tough. But when you're picking this high, that's how they're going to get better, is they're going to get contributions out of those 5. Then maybe you get a punter, and then you know, now you've got 6 guys that you're getting contributions out. If you can hit on that and all those spots, you're going to get better.
All right, number 46, make it happen. I know Decker isn't a stud, but he's capable. Do the Lions extend him, or his first contract his last with the Lions? I think it's his last.
And I think he can get an extension. The last 8 games of last season were so good for him that he really showed his potential. And if he can continue with that momentum, he'll earn a nice extension. All I think right. It's still up in the air, but that's where I'm leaning.
Colin Guy, Jesse James didn't produce to his new contract and has drawn criticism. Was he really that ineffective, or was it scheme and unrealistic counting stat expectations for a tight end too?
I think he was ineffective.
That's what I thought too.
I think the stats were definitely low, but I don't think. Go ahead.
No, but like when you watch, when he was out on the field, he wasn't making any type of a difference. It's one thing if you're catching a ton of passes, but it's also, you can also be a good blocker and all that. And he just didn't, there's no obvious plus minus for like NFL offensive players, just NFL players in general, because they don't get to be on the field playing defense, blah, blah, blah. And it's more, it's more granular than that. But it always seemed like when he was out on the field, it was like negative things were happening, or net zero type things were happening out of his position, similar to a Rick Wagner.
Okay. I can only think of one. I can only think of one play that Jesse James was the feature in that had any major impact at any point in any game. Like a lot of the times he was just serviceable, but that one play where he ran the underneath at the end of the game and they needed the first down to win, and they threw that, he went underneath and Stafford threw in the pass, and then he had to get that yard for the first down, and then they won the game. I think it was the Eagles game, right? That play, he was the difference in making that play to impact the game. I don't know if he made another impactful play like that throughout the whole season. And for the money he was making, he needed to make more than just one.
Joseph Blackwell, which of Quinn's 2019 draft picks outside of Hockenson do you see as having potential to really impact this 2020 team? I don't know if you should downplay outside of Hockenson. Like, it needs to be Hockenson.
Sure.
He needs to impact the 2020 team.
I think it's going to be Tavai. The stuff that we saw from Tavai in spring camp last year was so impressive in how they utilized him, but I don't think they had the flexibility in Jared Davis or Christian Jones or in Kennard in order to deploy Tavai into multiple spots. And I think that hindered him. I think also as a rookie, he was just learning how to stay, get comfortable. But the potential I've seen the potential in Tavai for a long time. Adding Jamie Collins, now Tavai's second year, I'm expecting a big jump from Tavai, because I see that potential there. And he's really going to push Jared Davis. I wouldn't be surprised if he actually wins the starting mic job outright.
All right, let's go. Finally, Daniel Cornell. Do you agree when the Lions decide who to draft, they have to look at the next five seasons, not just 2020?
I don't think it's five, but I think it's two or three. You know what I mean? Like, they have to be able to look long-term. Quinn even said that at the video conference yesterday. He's looking, they're looking for guys that can contribute in a shortened offseason, they're also looking for players that are the best players for the team, whether that's this year or next year. So I do think Quinn is looking ahead, and that's why, one of the reasons why I think a receiver is going to be so high on the Lions needs board.
All right. I think that'll, we covered a lot of them. We did pretty good.
Yeah, I was impressed. I thought we were going to run short of that. So I'm pretty sure we went longer than our normal time, too.
We did. We did go over, and that's fine.
Okay. So we've got another review from Danitoba 08. Appreciate that. We're working our way up there. Is that Dan from Manitoba? Maybe. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
See, that's very interesting. Well, but it might not be at the same time.
It's a clever name. It's a clever name if it is. Wrote a very nice review for us. And our iTunes are up to 273, so we're hoping to be able to stand with the other podcasts who are seeing an increase. So we're hoping that our numbers keep going up. But it's tough. It's a tough market out there right now.
More sharks in the water all the time.
Yeah, so it's hard. We'll see what happens. We appreciate everyone that has helped us get to that 273 mark. Patreon has seen a real big bump. Recently,
nice
mostly
boost.
Went from 49 to 62 contributors. That's amazing to me. contributors, you know, they've been able to, you know, help us find ways to be able to record this podcast remotely. And it's really just helped us all in general be able to keep this podcast going. So that was a big advantage for us to have these contributions from the Patreon people. So we appreciate that. I have a VIP Patreon Zoom meeting scheduled for tomorrow. So that's Sunday. So I'm going to hopefully we're going to have some fun conversations, and hopefully I can, you know, give them some information that they're looking for, and we'll have a good hour long session tomorrow. So that'll be a lot of fun. And I felt very blessed with everybody, you know, being able to help us keep going during
it's been great.
Unusual times.
And you know, and speaking about the unusual times, we all get a nice little distraction, not you as much because you're knee deep in your job, but everybody listening and people like myself is that we're going to be distracted by the NFL draft Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, well, whatever. And then there's gonna be all the fallout afterwards.
Right.
So, you know, so it's going to be a nice little break for everybody.
And we need to make sure people know we're going to keep going after, right? We're going to talk about how the players fit. Yeah, we're going to evaluate them. We're going to have a whole bunch of stuff coming after the draft as well. So we're not going away.
No, you're not going to get rid of us that easily. All right, that's all we got. That's all we got for this week. And once again, thanks to everybody out there listening. We really appreciate it. And until next time, let's go Lions.